So you moved to Mayo in 1932, right? And you
July
were 18.
The 19th.
Okay, wait a minute. July the 19th.
1932.
And you were 18 years old or something, weren't you?
No, I was 19.
You're just 19. And so how did you get there? On the Thistle? Was
it? No. Just aboard the steamer Keno.
Aboard the Keno.
5-day trip.
5 days. So do you remember those?
Oh, very clearly. I was with the Burners, the NC manager, which was a competition.
Uh-huh.
I remember going up the river there. About, and then shortly after, Gordon McIntyre arrived, the school teacher. We were buddies there for years.
Oh. So your dad had sent you up to be the general manager of the Mayo store?
To relieve my brother, yeah.
Oh, to relieve. And your brother's name was W.
William D.
William D. Okay. And was he named after Drury?
Yes, his uncle.
So he's...
Right on.
Okay. So is his middle name Drury? William Drury?
Yes. All us three boys are named. That was my mother's name, Sarah Drury.
Right.
And so she married... carried the family name on.
That's a very British tradition.
Yeah, and William Drury, Charles Drury, and Albert Drury. And then my father only had the name of Isaac Taylor, so it began to get mixed up with, well, it was like Innes Taylor and other I Taylor. So he put a D in his.
Oh.
Just like Bishop Stringer. You knew the Bishop Stringers.
He added the O, was it?
The O was. They asked him what it was for, and he says, nothing.
Okay, so then your brother had been up there working for...
2 years previous, yeah.
And he wanted out. He was.
Yes, he wanted to change, yeah.
Right, so then you went up and...
I left school in Vancouver, went right up to came here, got a briefing on the operations, although I'd worked all my life between steamboats and...
Right.
And delivering stuff to stores and going over the hills with Indian guides and things like that. And I was quite conversant with it, plus being a delivery boy when I was 11 years old. So I'd worked in the store all my life.
But you had no idea you'd be going up there for 10 years, did you?
No, I'd just gone up there for a couple of years. Of course, I met the right girl.
Yeah.
It was that story.
And she was born in Mayo?
No, she was born in Dawson, 1915.
And then moved to Mayo?
And they moved to Mayo in 1926. I just wrote an article on the McLennans of Mayo, or she did, and I have it on the word processor.
Oh.
Just got it off to this gang that sent this stuff down. You know, you've seen their work, McDonald's.
Yeah, the Mayo Historical Publication, is it?
Yeah, we know both the girls.
Right.
It was about stuff. That,
right, neat. Okay, so you arrived July 19th, 1932.
Yeah.
And what staff were there then? Just your brother was leaving?
Yes, there was a Mr. Jeffries.
Okay, so we've seen his Mr. Jeffries.
Senior, William Jeffries Senior.
And what was his position there?
Well, I was sent, he was like, us boys were sent, and we had the signatures, and we were sent up as managers, but we worked under him. Call it that.
He knew what was going on.
Well, he was a top grade salesman, he knew all that, but he didn't know anything about accountancy and bookkeeping and we were all trained in accountancy.
So that's what you'd done in Vancouver, taking accounting?
Yes, I took a on Fairview High. Do you remember that?
No.
It was on the corner of Broadway and Granville Street. You know that big corner where the aristocrat is?
Yeah.
Well, Fairview High was behind there. I took that as a night course.
Oh, I've seen a school that they used to teach secretarial in there too, did
That's
they?
That's right, that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned.
Oh, neat. So then you got up there and then Jeffrey showed you the operation and you showed him the accountancy stuff.
Well, I did the accountancy, he did the, he was like senior salesman and I was the accountant, delivery boy, and we had a store in Keno at that time. And I used to run up there and inspect the store and I did the books for them as well.
Right, so that was one other question we wanted to ask you later on, but so when you arrived at the Mayo store, was it just one building and then a warehouse?
Or? Yes, a big warehouse on the waterfront.
And where was the actual store?
It was right on the main track where it is today.
Right.
Same building.
Because we could only find one picture, was it?
No,
there's some pictures of it.
Yeah,
just of the street.
Yeah, of the street. And so when you got in there, was it the type of store, like you, this might sound funny to you, but it wasn't self-serve then, was it? You sort of walk in
goodness, and... Oh, no, you stood behind the counter and peddled everything. And the native population was very difficult to handle because they wanted to trade everything.
Right.
When, I mean, they, that was not barter. But what they want to do is they say, give me a sack of flour and pay for that.
Right.
And they'd say, oh, I'll have some sugar.
Uh-huh.
And the old girl would be sitting, or the native lady would be sitting on the floor giving him instructions, and he'd do all the buying.
Oh.
And it took the darnest time to handle it.
Yeah.
And of course, when I started speeding up the process, some of them didn't like it.
No.
But I'd say, well, do you want some calico? Yeah, blue? Yeah. How much? 3 yards. You hear the old girl at the back yelling, let's go. And then you say, well, you want some thread? Yeah, blue thread, yeah. And how about needle? Oh, needle, all gone. Get the needle, yeah.
So you actually stood there yourself and did that?
Yeah.
You were the help and waited on
people? Yes, and all the goods were in bulk.
Right.
Your rice and all that stuff. The flour is bagged. But all the rest of the cereals, beans, and all that stuff was in drawers behind you. And just
measured it out.
Pull the drawer out, scooped it up.
Because you know the store in Carcross, Sam, is it Watson's store?
Yeah.
Is it sort of that idea, the big counter and you're behind
it and you open
the big drawers?
Exactly, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Wow, and how many people did you have in there working as tailor and jewelry staff? There was you?
Well, me and the old man, and we used to get some fella in to help once in a while. But you must remember, it was just at the time the Mayo camp was closing down.
Oh, so.
See, they closed down in October, I think.
Of 32?
Of 32, wasn't it? Yeah.
So you didn't do deliveries either? People had to come in themselves and get the stuff you didn't rent?
Oh, yeah. I was a delivery boy.
As well?
Yeah.
My God. So how many hours a day would you work?
Well, we worked 65 hours a week.
65? And do you remember how much you were?
150 a month.
150, which was good pay in 32, was it?
Well, I was a millionaire.
65.
Then I got married and they gave me 175.
And had Mrs. Taylor worked in the store as well?
No, she never worked in her life.
Is that right?
She had a secretarial for it. Gordon McIntyre picked up all the girls in town that were grade nines as far as the school went. Single room schools. So he asked Jekyll, the commissioner,
uh-huh.
that he had a group of girls there that should have more instructions. He would be, he would like to get them secretarial courses. And there were six of them.
Jeez.
And he did that out of the goodness of his heart. Jekyll and went a couple of typewriters, so the girls all learned shorthand,
right.
secretarial skills, and some bookkeeping. And I think he got remunerated $25 a month or more.
And was Gordon McIntyre, I'm not quite familiar with what he did.
He was a school teacher.
So when he went up, he was the school teacher for
he
how
was
long?
School for, well, I think it was 10 years. He went overseas in. I think he went overseas.
For the war?
In 1940, I think. You can see he lives in town here.
So it's still the same McIntyre?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Gordy? Oh, yeah. He and I were buddies. We did photography together.
Jeez. So I sort of wanted to just fill in the history so we could figure out how all it worked. And then Jonathan has some actual accounting questions for you.
Yeah, some more specific.
Because what happened is we got all these records and there was no rhyme or reason to any of the organization. So what he's gone through and put all the balance books together, all the day books,
well,
things like that.
We didn't have accounts. Are you acquainted with accounts?
No, not really.
Then you better ask the question.
I call these balance books. I don't know what you call them.
Cash books.
Cash books.
That's my own handwriting.
Got a lot of these.
This is the daily tally with the cash.
Yeah. One question I wanted is these numbers here.
That's the journal, went to the journal.
So we do
that's
have
the journal there. Okay.
Right here?
Yeah. Of course, that's wrong there.
Right, so, but this is where it would be entered.
So this yeah. just indicated in here what
the journal
days.
66, yeah.
Oh, sorry, okay.
Yeah. This was, when you cashed up at night, this is what your cash that worked out. You just ran your...
So this bank, this is
that's the bank? With the Bank of Montreal.
In Mayo.
That's yeah. how much money you had in the bank.
Yeah, well, it was overdraft by the looks of it. Yeah, that would be it. Because we just, as soon as we got money ahead, we sent it on.
Okay, and this was the only account you had?
In Mayo. Mayo.
The bank?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the only bank, yeah. There was only one bank to start with. And these are the expenditures here. This is a collection that was on account receivable.
Okay.
And that would be for the cash sales for the day. And then this was what the denominator checks came in, and they had the cash, and the bank balance.
So this is, did they have bank books then too? So
oh
that
yes.
would that would
there should be some bank books.
Right, so that would tally with the what the bank would have on their balance as well.
Well, unless there's outstanding checks.
Right, which you didn't, yeah.
Yeah. But it was my books.
Right.
Not the bank's books.
No.
Because whenever you do an account, it's your books.
Mm-hmm.
Because you may write a check and the bank might not put it through. You have to have a false.
Right. So so you always knew that you only had right then
$89
yeah. for that day.
And
the next
you see,
day.
Well, you see, the hell is suspense? See, this is where we're sending money to the head office in Whitehorse. This is the only place this is when we sent money to the head office. We got denominations of $500.
So we saw that happened a lot. So as far as they were concerned, all the profits or whatever always went to Whitehorse.
That's right. We did not have a proper balance sheet.
Right.
All we had was the accounts receivable.
Uh-huh.
That was the customer's accounts.
Uh-huh.
And then we had this day book. And what else was it? I saw a journal I'd know. Did they carry out the same journal as I had?
This is 1950. I'll get one.
Get one from
yeah,
the 30s.
Yeah, we did have some.
Then I can, because there was different people took over.
When you left.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see.
Now, would Kino
have
you
the got
same books too?
No, Kino, I took
okay.
Kino. Kino had books. I did their daily tune up. Yeah, I did theirs too. That's where I picked the guy up for stealing.
Oh, did you?
Cash book. Yeah, he had that wrong. He pocketed. Mail Kino transfer.
So would Kino transfer their profits to you or directly to
no,
Whitehorse?
No, they were. They had a cash balance.
Yeah.
And but they had no bank account.
Ah. Oh.
This is 34. Oh, this is where I caught the bug.
So
yeah,
he was an employee
fellow,
working for you.
This is a fellow by the name of
so he'd made an error in adding, or he
yeah he made an error in adding,
and so that's where you figured
and he,
out.
And he put the difference in his pocket. So I went up there and he got mad at me. He was going to beat me up. I said, okay, I spent 5 years in military school. When did we get started here?
Did he go to prison?
No. He just resigned. He had a lovely wife and 2 children, so I just... he was doctoring the books.
Yeah.
What else was he doing?
Yeah.
Pumping cash out. That's all he had to do was to not record the proper sales.
Right.
Pocket the money. He was alone on there. So you don't know what... when you get an employee like that, you've got to...
fire them.
You've got to get rid of some other way. Promote him. Murphy's Law. Hell, that bloody suspense.
So where did Kino send the money?
They sent it down to us.
Okay.
And they had all the checks. There was only one bank account, and it was done in the Bank of Montreal. So any of their checks came down. Yeah, Capel. That's the guy's name. I've just seen where they sent money down. Or TD Mail. Right, he didn't send money down, they just sent checks down.
Right.
Because they were running out. And then we would send money up to them. Like, they'd run out of cash.
So how much was cash used in Mayo and Keno? Was it a lot on, like, we noticed you had people on credit, though. Like,
oh, yes, everybody had charge account.
Yeah. And so how would they pay it then? How often did you make them pay? Once a month?
Once a month. Yeah.
So would they come in with a check or would they come in with cash?
Yeah.
Usually?
No, mostly by check.
Mostly by check.
Most people had bank account. But some of the people didn't have steady jobs that wiggle out enough money. I mean, there's some people very poor.
So you would sort of cover somebody for more than a month if they were?
Oh, yes. I fed a team of horses, like two teams of horses. Yeah. Do you know the closest? You've heard the name closest?
Yeah, the close brothers?
Close family.
Okay.
No,
we're
thinking of really now.
Right.
What year you got here?
This is
some old handwriting. 34. This is a tough time.
Yeah. So the depression had hit hard.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Yeah. This is the White Horse account, you see, and these are the. See, we didn't have accounts payable. Our accounts payable was in there.
Mm.
You understand? We didn't owe the trade anything. We owed everything to White Horse. So we didn't have to pay. We didn't pay for it. We didn't pay any of this stuff.
Oh, I see.
White Horse paid it all.
Oh, so you just sent the money and they took care of it.
Yeah.
And so this White Horse account is how much you've just sent them, sort of?
Yes. Thing? Well, these would be credit notes.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, like Marshall Wells, and they put a payment in there, they get it in some anyway. Yeah, these were invoices.
So how would you ever know if Mayo wasn't pulling its own weight? White Horse would figure it out.
Yeah, well, I set up my own set of books because I wanted to know that. I didn't have to be an accountant. But they didn't have any. They had this in and out proposition.
Right.
So I set it up. And I woke up to the fact that we were during the Depression. Well, I got my wages raised. You could see that I couldn't raise a family. But I think I got $2,000 a year. And Mr. Jeffries had a girl going to college. So he got $2,500 a year. And then I worked the books out, and I figured out that the company was making $2,500 a year. But it was very hard to make money because the thing is, we had this heavy inventory.
Mm-hmm.
We got stuck by the boat,
mm-hmm.
came up by the river steamer, and we had to run all year through that. Well, it was quite a very light camp up to 1930, October 32. And we had like a complete set of dry goods. We had the three departments: groceries, dry goods. Oh, I split the hardware afterwards, but the store was divided into two departments.
So hardware was included in dry goods.
In groceries.
Groceries.
Mm-hmm. I think.
What would hardware be, for example, like
pick, shovel.
Okay.
Wheelbarrows.
So before then, you just had it right into groceries.
Here you are. Mm-hmm. Where's Marshall Wells? General Motors. Oh, that was expensive.
There's Marshall.
Oh. It was in groceries. McKay, Smith and Blair's dry goods. Marshall Wells. Yeah, it was Marshall Wells was a hardware item.
Okay, so.
Yeah, the dry goods was all soft goods, call it that way.
So So you sold pretty well anything there was to be sold. You could get in for somebody in mail.
Yeah, yeah. We sold everything. And, of course, we had access to Whitehorse.
Yeah, because you sold clothes and...
Oh, everything. Suits. I went up to camp, and after the camp opened up in 1935, one of the fellows phoned me up. He says, hey, since you come up here, we can fix... Everybody was getting back to work, you know, at the fair or that. And said, listen, we got fellas want suits. I said, well, they go. Oh, he says, we must have 16 suits to measure. God, I went up there and I measured 40 suits. Just a punk of a guy.
Jeez, we found some of the companies who sent you the different suit materials.
Oh, lounges.
Yeah, in the different...
Oh, look at this here. Huh? Yeah, John, Alec Miranda, he's still alive. Oh! Look at that, eh? Paul Germain, here's a native fellow from Chino. Roy Helene, the head of the radio station. Gerlitsky, Jack Gerlitsky, he was in the mine. And at the mine at the Elsa. He got two suits that day.
There's you.
Gee, there's my own suit. What was my waistline? Inseam. Waist 30.
Wow.
Look at it now. And we had to take weight, too. That was very important. I just got weight at the doctor's clinic. No weight? Oh, yeah, weight, 132. Oh, I'm only 20 pounds heavier.
That's not too bad.
No. Well, isn't that really something? Old Master Cicada. Here's the guy that did our wedding cake. Old Master.
What sort of name is that?
Master? It's a Japanese.
Yeah.
No Chinese weren't allowed in the country in those days.
So he lived in Elsa?
Yeah, he was, he was cook at the Silver King. This is, yeah. There's the minister, Reverend Valentine, he's West Van now. May, he was in charge of the radio station. He was a captain. She's May.
Yeah, so you would send this book, there was another copy of this?
No, and we send that out to Lowney's.
And they'd make it up right there from this?
Yeah, from what I
and
did.
And then how was...
Well, here's all your measurements. You see, and you had to get the weight in because they had a chart that varied.
Oh.
I mean, if a man may be short and stocky, whereas they may throw his arms out, like for instance myself. And then if there's anything intricate, you always have to put on the bottom. The occupation storekeeper. Because that's old Mr. Jeffrey. Well, isn't that something, eh? A.T. Hall, the bank manager. Al Seams, oh, there's a strange one. His name was Couture.
Oh.
And I used to cash his checks for him. And his checks came in as Couture. But he deserted out of the French Army.
Oh, so he changed his name.
No, how did he? He changed his name. He deserted out of some army anyway. But he got his pension.
Oh.
Yeah. And he used to come in. I used to cash his check. Nobody in town knew that he was a deserter.
There's
Nassau
already.
Now, this is a... That's Archie Gillespie that...
Oh.
He never did get... So he didn't get through.
So this is a copy you would send to Lowney's?
Yeah, Morrison.
This is the copy you were supposed
that's
to send.
My brother Albert did that one. That's the year I went and got married. That's what.
So would your wedding suit be in there? Did you, or did you come down to Whitehorse?
No, suit. Like I hadn't talked about.
No such thing.
Just got married. And Elmer Gustafson, oh, he was a good guy. Hey, Norman Whiteman. That's what Lord McIntyre's son was named after.
Norman.
Ronquist. Jean McCrimmon, my God, that's an old timer. Well, that's the story goes anyway. Walter Teodol, what a wonderful guy he turned out. My God, he left me, when he died, he left me executor to his will. And I didn't know about that. He just left me there. He was two houses down from me, and I used to look after his needs and stuff. And he, a year later, he got Ella Moses, that Moses Lucas's wife.
Uh-huh.
You know, Moses died, and so she came and looked after him. They lived together there next to us. So when his estate came along to be done, I just couldn't get over to them. I was running the territory. I just couldn't. And so I explained to them what they had. And I recommend that they let Ella remain in the cabin, not to sell it.
Right.
And I said, at that time, I'd be writing, and they told me, I wrote his brother, Victoria, and explained how Walter had been what a fine character and all this, and that he had this native wife, and that I would recommend. I got the loveliest letter back from the people that I'd known him so well. They'd never heard from me.
Oh, it's all right. Yeah. And did they let her stay in the cabin?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, and they gave up.
Isn't that great?
Now,
I was just wondering what these were. Okay, here you've got collections on account, I assume.
Yeah.
And these entries were someone's name. Jeffrey.
Yeah, that was a general ledger.
So why would he have a dollar all of a sudden?
Well, he got a dollar cash.
For him?
Yeah.
Like for the store or for his own use?
For himself.
And so that would come out of his pay
so
later on.
This doesn't go back that far. This is August. Is there any reason for being in August?
No.
No, I just audit my work. You notice these pages, the
mm-hmm.
color?
Mm-hmm.
I was very I took a accountancy course and that.
There's your C.D. Taylor Wren.
See this here?
Uh-huh.
Do you see that color there?
Mm-hmm. The blue?
The red and blue?
Uh-huh.
Just watch it for a while. Now, see how much softer this is on your eyes? I just said to hell with those books. I went ordered another set of books because it was getting my eyes. Here's your pages now. Where are we at here? This is September the 1st. There's we bought some grocery. Bought a grocery item. Charged up to groceries. $2 expenses. Postage went to postage. Charge that at expense. See, that's already a cash journal. And then for the day, we took in $320, and that would be to the accounts receivable file. And then there's cash sales, $110, of which was broken down to two departments, groceries, and it was sold. $2.85 to the drivers that day.
Jeez.
You follow that now?
And you figure totted all this up on those little other slips we have, eh?
Oh, have you got the little pink slips?
Where are those?
Not yellow slips.
Yeah.
The little squares. That was pertaining to this here.
Yeah.
Now, so this dollar, would that be like this one here?
We bought some fish.
Just for yourself, you mean?
No.
You bought it off somebody.
Oh, here we are. 1934. Oh, boy, you really got my vintage on. These are the little cash slips, you see.
So your fish then would be on one of these. This
when
$1 of
that.
Fish.
What have we got here?
I don't know. So September 1st.
All right. Go back and see exactly what happened here. Groceries, 4.5 pounds of fish to the hospital. We bought that for the hospital and we charged it up.
Oh, I see. So that's how you know the hospital owes you $1.
Well,
and then you'd write it
go through
else.
The sales sir.
Through
yeah.
that big thing, too.
No, through the sale at the counter books.
Okay, and then, right.
And they'd pay for it there because you couldn't handle cash as the government. You know, it takes a year for it to get the money out of the government. And there's $2,
$3.
Postage, is it? What the hell is a $3? I wonder how crooked is that, wasn't it? $2? That's the postage for $2.
Right.
Went up to Burns and bought bacon. See, you follow that, do you?
No. Yeah.
That would tie in with theirs. this is how you used to get cash out. Well, that's water. The water man would come around and I'd pay him and then just charge up to my account. Because we didn't have money in those days. Isaac Millett, he's the one that used to have my rent. I used to pay him $10 a month. I used to pay for my little cabin. It's still standing up there. Just a kid, eh?
So you'd actually take your own rent out of the
out of the till.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, because you didn't carry any money.
And then out of your monthly wage, and you just get less than your 150, you said, so you'd get 140.
Yeah, well, I wrote my own check out, you see.
So, and that's how you taught out that you now only owe...
Yeah, I think you'll probably find out that somewhere on there there's... But the general ledger my account would be in the general ledger.
So cash given to people like Kaczynski here would be for...
Johnny Kaczynski.
Spurs, perhaps?
Johnny Kaczynski. That was cash. It was cash given to him. What the hell are we getting him cash for? On that's September the... You've got his signatures here, you know.
Do you remember Kaczynski?
Oh, he's
very
still...
Well?
Oh, yeah, he's still in.
Is that right?
Johnny, oh, yeah. They're all dead except Johnny. Oh, and Mrs. Betty. She went to school with Betty when Gordon McIntyre taught. Where was it, September?
Because Kaczynski somehow is related to the Seeley family.
That's right.
Peggy Seeley was just
right.
Her great uncle
that's
or
right.
Something.
You're right on. Because Betty knew all those people as when she was a kid down there.
Right. We got in some pictures of some of the Kaczynskis.
Now we're in September the... What are we looking for? Johnny Kaczynski?
There we
are. There's Johnny's signature. Now, if you go back to 1931, you'll see the signature of the...
Matt Trapper.
Matt Trapper in there, I think.
We don't have 31, though, do we?
No, it might seem.
Johnny Kaczynski. Yeah, that's... People come in, I want some money. We just give it to them.
And then they... What? And then...
I was charged up their... This.
Oh, they could get money on their charge account.
Yeah, that's right. Just like Woodward's in Vancouver. Dave Hayden.
So that's why...
That's the furs. All the fur that was trapped in those days.
We found some of your fur auction records.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I tell you who was looking for those.
Oh, yeah?
It's I'm just reading his records today. I got that Northern Journal. Have you seen that?
Oh, the Northern Review? Or
Northern Review, yeah. I was reading that one.
Oh, Ken Coates.
Ken Coates. And Ken wrote to me a letter to him.
Oh.
And I wrote back to him and I told him I didn't have any records.
Because we found a file of some of the fur. You used to go outside sometime, or somebody went outside and would send you how the fur sales went. Was it your dad would go outside sometimes at the big fur auctions and would
write
back?
Well, we had but we should get the from Canadian Fur Auction.
Yeah, but yeah. Somebody used to say they were out. Remember we had some letters from Vancouver and they'd write to you and say, these ones are going particularly well, but they're spring fur.
Oh, yeah. That would be the...
Do you want to check that down?
That would be Mr. Little.
Sure, yeah.
That would be Mr. Little of Fur Auction.
Yeah, and he would give you advice on
Little
which
fur
ones
auction.
Not to accept.
Yes, that's right, that's right. And the thing is, it was very dangerous because fur is like jewelry.
Yes.
There's flaw.
Uh-huh.
I just read about gems in the doctor's office today. It was a long time coming. So I read the whole thing. And you know, you get through the flaw. And fur is good fur. It's worth its weight in gold.
Right.
But you can get cull stuff. And that's where us boys were trained. We were trained with an inch of our life in the fur business. Because you just pick up a towel, you can just shake it, you know, and you can feel it, see it.
Uh-huh.
And then you take in the spring of the year. Of course, that's why they stopped you from trapping. You know, that close season. The reason is the pelts.
They go down in quality.
Yeah.
So when would be the best time? Right, December would be the best pelt.
Well, you're different. You're long-haired fur. It was a cold winter. November, late November or December, the good pelts would be coming in because they get long-haired fur.
So do you have to go right at 12?
No, I can do it all day.
So you had to learn a lot.
Well,
like,
I really,
we
grew up on it. We worked in the fourth grade. The company used to send the fur out to, the company used to send, yeah, that's George George Little? Did he send some letters?
We get some really neat letters down through in the middle.
And that's a Seattle fur exchange. My brother took a course in fur.
So if somebody brought in furs, then you would...
This was...
You would pay them right then. You wouldn't take it on demand or whatever and tell them how much they got for it later.
Well, the only time we ran Jeff is like Mr. Jeff would be buying fur, I'd be buying fur, and then he'd come to the office to get their money. You know, sign one of these slips.
Uh-huh.
When they sign the slip and get their money.
Right, so if you made a profit on it, that was for you then? Like, well, so you guessed to...
Yes, yeah.
So I brought in my fur, you say it's worth $20. Well, you gave me the 20.
It's like the stock market.
Yeah.
Up and down.
So you could lose money.
Oh, yes, and then we lost $40 million in the fur from 1928-29.
Is that right? The fur market
dropped. The bottom
went
out of it. See, the depression hit, nobody went fur. So, down she went. We were paying $65 to $70 for a mink, and we were getting $10. Martin, we were paying $40. We get $2.
That's 28-29, right after the stock market crash, or before it.
This is a report to me. This is a report that was sent out by the head office.
Head office, Whitehorse?
Whitehorse, yeah.
And so where would they have gotten this information?
They've got it.
By reading?
No. They get it by their returns.
And whose signature is that?
W.S. Drury.
So that's Uncle?
Uncle Bill. Yeah, Uncle William. Isn't this something? Oh, this is late. See, that was just before I came out of there.
We have some other, and they're just covered in silt. There must have been a flood somewhere.
Oh, that's me.
And they're just black. Well,
here's my dad's report, December 41. Yeah. And they get their... Yeah, they were constantly on the market. They knew exactly what it was. See, we used to sell all our fur prior to the Depression to London. Lamson's fur auction, and we used to sell all our stuff there. Pretty done. Lucille Gray. He used to put little notes in.
Yeah, we saw some. Hello to Betty and Barbara.
Well, for goodness sakes, look at that, eh? I just just completed my story on the Dawson Island. What is it called? That kind of market. Dawson Road.
Oh, yeah.
The old Dawson Road. I got it from its inception. Well, it's all wrapped around here in tailors or breweries. And I wrote it. It's just an article. My brother made a trip through to help me the first year taking stock.
Oh.
And he came through by dogs all the way to Carmax, Mayo, and then he came back on his way to Silver.
Jeez.
Isn't this interesting?
Which brother was that?
Bill.
Bill.
Yeah. Albert came after. We're like Oliver Twist and Dickens. We want
more.
Isn't
that cool?
Isn't that? Yeah. They counted on me. I didn't realize what a fortunate position I was in. You know, that they depend. Right, I had the biggest store at that time, or if we were talking about depression.
How was the Whitehorse store doing at that time?
Well, it was doing, because it was dependent upon the shipyards.
So they did okay.
Yeah, this is my dad's. Isn't that wonderful? You can see what a tight little thing. Following telegrams received from little brothers, sold 19 Fisher, that was mine, at 47. Marna, that was Coyote.
Oh, really?
You were everything was in cold.
Oh, so that other people
squirrels
would...
were wolves. I used to code them in. wallaby was a link.
Who were you afraid would find it out?
What?
Why did you put them in code?
Well, the Fish and Radio Station would take it over for a competition.
So is that mink?
What? Fisher. That's Fisher's mink, yeah.
Okay.
So who was your competition right then? It was?
Well, Mervyn's. Mervyn's.
He was buying fur, too.
God, I can't remember that. Most exciting day in my life, I guess. Second day, came skiing from the Peel River country. And they had loads of mark pelts. And mark was around $40 average. And they came into the store on a Saturday night. And they were, you know, they'd been on the trail for 10 days or 2 weeks. They came all the way over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got sardines and, you know, they want something to put in the tummy. They went down to the Indian village. That was down below the town. Because the Indians were separating them. And so I said to one of them, I said, hey, I'll come down the store tomorrow. I'll be down the store tomorrow morning. You need any good? Dan just looked at me like that. Well, I did wrong that time. So the next Monday morning, they came back, and I dumped them. They brought the fur, and they all said, you dump them out yourself. Dump them out. Oh, fellow, you shoot by the 9 car on right away. When they traveled, they shut everything down on Sunday, and they had the old crew, the same Lushu people, same mm-hmm. as the old crew, and they had they shut everything down on Sunday, and they did their mending or anything like that, and then started on the trip the next day. And here I did Sullivan, about 7 stuff on Sunday.
Oh.
And old Andrew Carnese, he was a catechist, and he told the people, and the old people told me when I first got in contact, that storekeeper Mayo's, we teach him something. there was always competition around trying to buy Bob Levesque from Fraser Falls. He was in there too. But they could take this information and transport to them. But anyway, this bunch came through with all these Martins, and Martin was averaging around $40 a pelt. Well, I started in, of course, I was in contact with the iPhone. It's such a beautiful bunch of Martins. Well, I started in, and the Indians come in, and they follow, you know, they get like that. I hear one, $39. And you could follow the conversation. You know, they have a limited number of words in the language, even if they are spending a lot of money. They only have about 900 words. So you could follow it. You fell instinct with their conversation. Yeah, Mervyn paid me $49 average, and I paid $4. So the next bunch of fur come in. Raise the ante a dollar. You know, old Mervyn, he'd go up $1 to see if he'd outbeat me. So I kept it. Well, I got the $45. So I sent that man. Cannot go to 45. They had exceptionally good fur. I said, these are the best types. So I bought them all. But Dad got so damn excited. I bought about 14,000, which was multiplied that by 5 like it is today.
Yeah.
And so Dad got the next airplane, came over to see how done. He laid them all out. Of course, he had the advantage. We laid them all out, got the whole row of this Martin skin. He laid them on. Of course, you can grade fur better in large groups. Like
right.
Anything else you lay out, you can grade. If you've got 3 pelts, I mean, pretty good, better than best. But when you get a whole bunch, then you can really grade up maybe 8 lines. And there's a difference of, my dad said he'd pay $40 more for one I did. And he had 2 pulled to the side. He says, what'd you pay for those? I said, I paid $52. He says, they're worth 70.
Gee.
See, I wasn't just keen at it.
So how much can you sell them for?
Well, we don't. But we tried to make 10%.
Which is?
Well, all we were interested in is not making money. We wanted an industry.
Yes.
We wanted the people out working, and then we could make them. We made the money on the merchandising end of it.
Ah.
And if we didn't pay enough, they couldn't live. So that's why Mr. Mervyn had to leave Lansing Creek. He creamed them. The Indians used to work their way down to our place because we gave them fair prices.
Right.
And what they did is they came in and And he had quite a business there. Then he came and established Mary Bart Bennett's place out. And he started there with looking hands down. We were given fair prices. They were all interested in 10%.
Yeah.
The 10% was to look after the law of the losing years.
Yes. But you had to ship them all.
And sometimes we made tremendous profit on fur because it went up, but then it...
But then you lost a quarter of a million another year.
Damn, look at that. No reason for that at all.
So they said Bennett Brothers, not Binet, right? It was the...
No, Jean Bennett.
Bennett.
Yeah. We analyze. Look at these pelts. Here's your pressure for the right thing. Yeah.
So this is how you file things on things. Was this hanging on the wall?
Shannon files.
You didn't have
all nailed on the wall, and they're just to grab a file.
Right. And when would you close one off? Just when it got too fat.
Yeah.
That was it. You started again. So how did you arrange them? By fur files, accounting files, or like?
A hardware file, driver's file.
Because we haven't found many correspondence files of, you know, between you and Mayo saying. Or between you and Whitehorse, you know, talking about...
Well, there's a whole file, because every one of my letters, there was something about how the children were doing.
So you kept actual copies of every letter you sent as well?
Oh, absolutely. They're all in this color.
Okay, and this was the copy?
No, this is the radio telegram.
Oh, okay. So we can't find those yet, but they must be somewhere.
Got some letters.
Well, don't be scared.
But not 10 years
over.
Worth?
No, we don't have 10 years.
Oh, this is this must be a key. Yeah, this is, I was a General Motors agent there as well. Oh, what's this? This was when? 1937.
So they sent Albert.
You know what this is all about, do you?
No.
I don't want to get married.
So they sent Albert up.
Sending Albert Monday plane at Sis store. Stop. You go to Keno. To Rose. Take charge. Speed up work. Oh, the Yukon Rose.
Oh.
That was the little boat. She mm-hmm. was sunk.
Oh.
And when I was taking my bookkeeping course, I went to Vancouver Technical School. Got a diesel automotive and an engineering degree, diploma. And so the thing is that the steamer Kaska
mm-hmm.
and the steamer Klondike were both sunk
oh.
in 1937. And so we did, we got through our run up the branch doors. And we took the Rose to the White Pass to look after the Stewart River Run to free the steamer Keno for the main stream that lost two of their main boats. So so the plane came down. Let's see, the speed up work until completed by Dawson ship. We repaired around the bank. If necessary, take Palmer. That was Wes Palmer.
He worked for you?
No, he was a mechanic and stuff. Wired for second extra magneto leaving Vancouver tonight. Stop. Doubtful catch tonight's boat. You might procure magneto from Yukon Gold. That I flew down, the plane came in. Betty's, this is August the 14th, and Betty's sisters were married. I got the airplane. Program was still going on in our house. I got the airplane, flew down. They put me 5 miles down on the river from where the boat was. And I came back. And there was heavily bear country. An old fella, prospector was right there on the riverbank. So I told him, oh, he says, you can't go up alone. He says, I'll go with you. I said, okay, I'll spare you a. I'll give you a meal. How's that? Fine. So we walked 5 miles up the river. We came to the barge, which was on the right hand. I could see the plane flying over. And the boat had been sunk. It was pulled up and they repaired it. drilled a hole through the boat that fell back, slipped back into the rocks, and broke the rocks and sank. And the motor and everything was underwater, and they couldn't get the motor running, so they sent me down. And of course, by hook or by crook, I had one. It was two different types of. He had an impulse starter, and if he didn't have an impulse starter, great big engine pulled over the bottom, you couldn't get her started. So I had enough there, and I took. When I got in there, I was stuck in the oven. They didn't know about it. Stuck them in the oven and cooked it, and I took all the moisture out. Mm-hmm. And I cooked the magneto, and I put them back on again. One was a new one that didn't have an impulse drive, so I cooked one of the other two. I cooked the other two, and I got one to throw a good charge, and I got the motor going. But the funny thing, when I got there, everything was in desolation. The whole thing was shut down. There was no progress. I went up to see the captain. He was across the river. They rowed me across. I gave them the signal and they saw the airplane come out. So I went across there and I said, "Captain, what the hell's wrong?" It was this bar jerk and shambles that we live in. It looked like shambles. It was full of diesel tanks, diesel oil. And he says, "Damn fuck." He says, "It won't do anything." He just opens up 10 cans and says, "Here." He says, "We haven't had a decent meal." He says, "You can't." And all these folks working in water and stuff. Oh, I says, "Well, we better rectify this right away." He says, "Hey, what's the rules about mutiny? Have you talked to him about quitting?" He says, "I told him." I says, "Oh, kidding, that's just fine." So I says, "What's the law about mutiny?" See, a river captain had to know the rules of the sea as well. That was part of his point. Oh, he says, "Yeah," he says, "it's mutiny." So I came back on the barge. The guy had sort of bluffed us off. I knew there was something wrong by the way the cook was. You know, me, bastard. And so I said, so we got back to the boat. So I said, "Captain, come here." I said, "If you give this man instructions to put these meals on, I'm the owner of this operation myself. I've been delegated by my father, who's the owner, to get this thing on the road." And he says, "We haven't had a decent meal." And the cook says, "I've done the best I can under these conditions." I said, "Has he done the best?" He said, "No, you put the old judge on something."
Yeah.
He says, "This man is not doing." I says, "Could you call this mutiny?" "Yeah." I says, "Okay. Which is your best man? We'll put this fellow in what do they call it? In irons?" I says, "We'll put this in irons, we'll use rope, and we'll put him in there, and we'll take him to court when we get to Whitehead, the mail." He says, "You can't do that." I says, "You knew the rules of the sea." I says, "This is how it goes." And he says, "We'll feed you bread and water until you get there." And, oh, he says, "You can't do that." I says, "In, come on, fellas." And they had ropes there. And they were going, I was going to fuck it up. God, I don't know. Well, 21 years of age. So, well, he says, "What do I have to do?" I says, give these men a hot meal right now." So he got to work at 8 o'clock with the dandiest feed, and I brought a bottle of rum with me to cheer the crew. So we had a few drinks, and we had the book launched, the motor started running, and we were back in the mail 4 days after I had. Anyway, those are some of them. I shouldn't be talking about
those. Oh, those are great.
But anyway, that's what I'm putting in my book.
Yeah.
Reminiscences.
How long is your book going to be?
How long is it going to take? Well, I never did. But I've got 150 pages done now. It's on called topics like that. Oh, for God's sake, look at all this stuff. Well, that's another story.
Huh.
Well, if you know my phone number and you want to know anything, why just.
Yeah.
Now, what else you got to ask?
What else did you have, Jonathan?
I think that's pretty well it. But you didn't pay for any goods directly. You just sent money to Whitehorse and they paid for it.
That's right. Yeah. That's our accounts payable ledger.
How did Whitehorse know what to send you every day?
Oh, I. No, no, no. We just put big orders up.
Like orders on big sheets and stuff.
Oh, yes. And we order for the spring, and then fill ins, and then the fall orders. And the fall orders, we generally got the fall merchandise in August, because the rates went up after August on account of the water levels, the wet ask to charge them more. And then the fall of the year, in September the 10th, all the perishable goods, bacon and eggs and all that stuff came as high. I've written all this stuff down.
How about vegetables and that? That was it for them?
Well, we could grow vegetables in the area.
But, so you had to grow for your own, you didn't sell vegetables then? Like, if you didn't have time to tend a garden?
Oh, we had potatoes and onions.
All year?
Oh, yeah. They were very good shoot. On hand, yeah, this is my first buying control. This is what I call my first buying control.
That doesn't come off.
Yeah, that's why we did it. That's the order. It was all done in alphabetical order, you'll notice. Don't tell anybody, but it's all stricken. And I had a book to go by.
And then you'd send one of these to White Horse?
Yes, they'd get their, that's it.
And so every branch was doing the same sort of thing, mail?
Supposed to, yeah.
Supposed to.
Theirs were different. They'd put cat, no, they'd say cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Next time it would be a cat. And then traps. They went all over the place.
You had to pay for shipping, right?
Yeah, I financed the my freight bills. That was a chore that I had to meet up with. I paid that, and then the White Horse would get less money because that was the inventory value.
Mm-hmm.
They paid for the merchandise. Of course, they could get 3 to 6 months credit.
Because sometimes freight was, when you used a plane, sometimes it was very expensive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for God's sake, look at that, eh? Soup.
What was the population of Mayo when you got there, do you think, in 1932?
250, 300, but I'd say the area was about 500 people.
And then when the camps were in 1935?
Yes, the camp closed down and it came back up.
So was there sort of the camp guy, he used to order huge amounts from you then? There was one sort of, when the camps were in?
Well, we didn't have the mine.
Oh, you didn't?
No. The mines were American controlled. Mr. Wernicke is an American, and Bradley's.
So who used to supply them?
Bradley's, and they supply all the commercial companies. But we had all the customers.
Did you know Roy Butterworth when he was on the dredges?
Well, that's Dawson now.
But he was up near Mayo, wasn't he? Don't we have a few pictures of his near Mayo?
He could have been.
O'Hare, maybe.
Yeah, God, that's right. You're talking my era now. These are all my figures.
Here?
Isn't that funny? Come here. My little Leslie Button. You remember the first time I saw you?
No. How? How little was I?
There was a group of people came from Yeltsin. Sang a little, then a German play, grunge play. Nothing right here. Anyway, it was all sung beautiful, and there was quite a few German people there. And your mom invited us all over to your place after the play, these Elsa people, because we'd be Mayoite shooting. So we were very your two brothers who fell asleep and lay baby brat of a girl. Anyway, these songbirds came right along, and I think your mother brought you up and this great big German fellow, 6'2", says, "Let me have the baby." And he sang Little Babina with you in his arms. You just took it all in. He knew how to handle it. He stuck it.
Was the song in German?
Yeah, it was all in German.
Oh.
Yeah, but I mean, you get it, and then he translates only, but you know, you're trying to get it. But that was the first time I saw him.
And I shut up when he's saying.
Anyway, our house is full of memories like that. We can talk on any subject.
Look at how dirty these are.
This is 1930.
This one's
this is 35, 36.
Do you drink a lot of champagne?
Is there lots of champagne ordered?
No, there be no booze. No champagne. No champagne. That's more champagne.
Yeah.
We were out and took stock very carefully. And at Dave, the cook says that there were over $1,400 to be accounted for. Which sent out on credit and not account. This was the champagne store.
So $1,400.
Yeah, not
who was in charge of champagne? Oh, down there. Like you must have known all the people and all the brands,
you
see.
But what I mean, we don't remember.
Yeah.
Things like that.